Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Marcus Berkman has been a freelance writer since about 1988, and he's written 13 or possibly 14 books. It's not me that doesn't know, it's the notes, and we'll find out very shortly what that number is if we can. His new book is called How to Be a Writer: Baths, Biscuits and Endless Cups of Tea. Marcus Berkman joins me on the line via Zoom right now. Marcus, good morning, good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I mean, I could do with some more tea, and I don't actually have any biscuits to hand, but I'm in not in bad shape.
A freelance writer with no biscuits?
No, they're downstairs in the biscuit tin, and I forgot to get them, actually.
1988, your career as a freelance writer started. Did you always want to write, Marcus?
Not really. It sort of crept up on me. Because it was in my 20s and I was doing a number of dead end jobs which I didn't like and wasn't any good at. And the writing sort of came in around then. And I did a maths degree at university, which is just hilarious to consider now. But no, the writing just crept up on me, really.
Doing a maths degree, of course, there are often more letters than numbers in equations, aren't there? Like X's and Y's and B's and C's and A's. So it was good training.
Unfortunately, I wasn't a very good mathematician. I got a double third, which is not a famous degree, but it means you get a third in your first year exams and a third in your last year exams.
Okay.
And I just wasn't very good. And so I definitely needed to find something else to do with my life that wasn't anything mathematical.
So is it your 13th or your 14th book? And where does the confusion arise?
The confusion arises because I can never remember, and I have to go through it and count them up.
All right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I think this is actually, this is my 13th. I think this is my 12th book or 13th. I'm not really sure. It also depends what you count. You know what I mean?
All right. What do I need to know then if I'm going to be a writer? What are the key points?
Well, it's important to note that this is not a book called How to Write. It's How to Be a Writer, and it's about it's basically about sitting in a chair, sitting at a keyboard for a number of hours a day, every day for 35 years, and somehow making a living. And I mean, in a way, I'm mystified by this as much as anyone is. I really don't know how I've managed to pull it off, but I have, and I'm still doing it. And it's a great life. I mean, if you are quite an introspective sort of person and you like your own company a lot and most of what's going on in your world is going on in your head, it's a great life. I think the problem comes, I know a very extroverted writer who really struggles with all of the hours of the day she has to spend by herself. Mm. She finds it just, she says, you know, I wish I could work in an office and see people and you know, do other things. And mm. But not me. I'm quite happy by myself with lots of biscuits.
Mm. All right. When you were working for the newspapers, were you writing news stories or were you writing opinion pieces or?
Oh, I've never written a news story in my life. I wouldn't know where to begin. I started off as a TV critic. My first newspaper job was as rock critic of the Daily Mail, which was a very surreal job, which I did for about 3 or 4 years. And that involved writing a week fortnightly column, I think it might have been. Okay. May have been even monthly, but it was a regular column about music, you know, reviewing records, and then going to live gigs and having to review those. And I did that for about 3 years, and then I gave that up. The weekly column sort of died a death naturally. Mm. And the live reviewing, I got terrible tinnitus after a Tina Turner gig in Antwerp, which was a surreal thing. And it was one of the loudest concerts I've ever been to.
Wow.
And unbearable. And my ears just rebelled. And so I said to them, I can't do this anymore. But by this time, I was already doing TV crits for the paper. And I did that for another 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there've been other various other jobs all around the same time for different newspapers and magazines. And that's how I carry on today. I mean, I haven't written a TV review in anger since 2003, but.
So what do you write about now? Or what have you written about in the last maybe 10, 15 years or 20 years then?
Now it's a lot of book reviews still for the Mail. And I write, a monthly quiz for Saga magazine, because I'm a big quiz nutter.
Okay.
And I edit a column called Dumb Britain in Private Eye, which is all the really stupid real answers given on quiz shows on radio and television.
Okay.
Which has been going 20 years now, and I've been editing it all that time. And I also write book reviews for Private Eye from time to time. I've got one coming up quite soon of really terrible books.
Mm.
It's a different sort of thing to the Mail. The Mail, you always have to write positively. So if you get a book through and it turns out to be crap, then you just send them a message saying, I'm sorry, this book isn't any good. And they say, forget about it. They only want to review things that are any good.
Mm.
And Private Eye, it's exactly the reverse. You're looking for things that are going to be terrible. And if by some chance it turns out to be quite good, you write a little email saying, actually, this book's pretty good. And they say, oh, forget about it. Two sides of the same coin.
All right. If I pick up the book and if it is in the back of my head that I would like to be a writer, take me through a couple of the things that you tell me that I should know.
What should you know? Firstly, it's very much harder than anyone could imagine to get in on this. I mean, there are so many people trying to be writers who can't write. And so being able to write is a sort of helpful thing. And that's something that can only come through doing it. So it's the old 10,000 hours, I can't remember who his name is. The 10,000 hours of practice.
Yeah.
The reason the Beatles were good was they spent 10,000 hours playing in Hamburg. And, you know, it's just the practice. You just have to keep going. And then you have to hope that you find a voice, that you have a voice and you find it.
Mm.
And then you can make a living, I hope. I mean, my voice is primarily humorous. I'm basically humorist. I've been, you know, that's what I've always written.
Right.
It's not exactly jokes, but you know.
Yeah, the funny side of stuff.
Yeah, that's what I do. And it's much harder for me to write a dead serious piece than it is for a serious writer to write something with jokes in.
When you were starting off in 1988, there were newspapers and there were magazines. For somebody who'd be starting off now, there are blogs, there are websites, there are online publications, there are newspapers and magazines still. Is it easier for somebody to become a writer and to be able to find an audience?
I think it's probably easier to become a writer. I think it's much harder to make a living at it because you know, fees have gone, have plummeted over the last 15, 20 years, 30 years. I had a contract once with U Magazine, the Mail on Sunday magazine, to write, I can't remember how many it was, 8 pieces or something over a year. Mm-hmm. And I was being paid £750 a time for each of these pieces.
Okay.
And, you know, such contracts don't exist now. You wouldn't get that. It just doesn't exist. And the Mail still pay quite well, but they don't pay that well. And, you know, I mean, even 15 years ago, 10 to 15 years ago, the Mail would ring me up and they would say, we need a page 8 or a page 9, an op-ed, you know, a feature which is usually basically just opinion with jokes about something or other. We need it by 4 o'clock. And I'd sit and write it, and it'd be about 1,100 words, maybe 1,000, 1,100, maybe even 1,200 words. And you get between 800 and 1,200 quid for that. And that, and if whether it went in or not. And the thing is that what would happen there is that they were commissioning 4 or 5 of these a day,
right,
these pieces. They would then design it and set them all up and show them to the editor, and the editor would say, I don't like that one.
Curate.
I want that one. And so the one that he wanted went in, and the others just were dumped.
But they were
and
paid.
That was great, because that was money for jam. All you had to do is, in my experience, was to write some not particularly right-wing opinion in there somewhere, and that was usually the end of it.
And it was done and dusted with that. Are there things that are there potholes or pitfalls that we need to know about if we're going to write?
Potholes and pitfalls. So many. I mean, it may be that you're just not very good, and this is something that I know a lot of people have found. And it's very, very hard to accept that you're just not very good. I mean, you know, I've had to accept that I'm not very good at almost everything else, mm-hmm. and I'm quite used to that now. But you know, I'm not very good at most things, but I can write, and there are lots of people who can write okay. I've got a friend who's been writing novels for 35 years. He's never got close to having one published, and he's just published it himself, and I haven't read it yet. Slightly nervous of reading it, because it might turn out to be... I read some of his earlier stuff, and it was truly abysmal. And he can write quite well, but he's not quite... It's not quite good enough, and there have been so many not very good novels published over the years, and you know, I think he's just written lots more which weren't good enough to get published, and I must get his new one, because I want to see if he's got better. And he's about the same age as me, but he's been doing it for years without any success at all. So it does help to be quite good. I think that's the main the main pothole.
Is this a kind of a lifetime commitment for you? Are you 24/7 looking for stories or for ideas and jotting them down? You know, the way sometimes a comedy routine is about, it's observational, and a good comedian can write a script about something that they see in the local supermarket. Are you like that, where you see something, you say, you know what, this is a good idea for an article, and you write it down? So when the phone rings and someone's looking for a little piece, it's there. It's in the drawer already.
Well, not really. Those articles don't really exist, because whenever anyone calls up, they've always got an idea. You know, they say, "Will you do a hatchet job of Michael Parkinson?" Was one that I got once from the Mail, and I said, "No, I don't really want to." And they said, "Why not?" I said, "Well, I quite like Michael Parkinson. I don't see anything wrong with him. Don't want to do that." And they never called me again, oddly enough. But. No, they always, if someone calls you up, they always have a very strong idea that they want you to do. And the only time that those things come in useful, I had a column for The Independent for about 30 weeks before the paper stopped printing for the magazine. And it was one of the best things I've ever done. And I had to write 610 words about anything I wanted. And then I became an absolutely rampant collector of ideas, and was constantly doing exactly what you say. I mean, absolutely everything came into play there, but generally the ideas, those sort of ideas tend to work best for books. So once you start writing a book, you keep coming up with themes to write about. I'll give you an example. I've just and been very, very productive over lockdown. And I've just written another book, which is coming out this time next year. I've finished it.
Okay.
And it's working title. I'm not very good with working titles, but I have a very good publisher who's very good with titles. And my titles tend to be a bit wrong seal, you know, it does what it says on the tin, and his tend to be slightly more elaborate. And this one is called Young Oblique Old, Young /Old, which is basically about being 60, 61, which is where I am at the moment, and is a follow-up to a book that I wrote 10 years ago about being 50. And I've been, you know, it's made up of little short chapters. And someone said to me the other day when we were sitting watching TV, he said, have you written anything on libido? And I thought, oh, no, I haven't. So I think there's an extra, that's another chapter. And so I've got to start thinking about that. And it'll come out in the, you know, the ideas will emerge as I'm writing it, I'm sure. But that's how it always works, is that you just have to start, and then the ideas come. There's a writer called Jeff Dyer, of whom I'm sure you've heard, who writes these wonderful digressive books of nonfiction. And he says he hates research. He has a tendency to write what he feels and knows first, and then do the research that he should have done first. He does it afterwards, just to confirm, you know, just to sort of back him up. And I feel the same way. I'm not very interested in research. Research is boring. But I'm very interested in having lots of silly ideas and writing them down.
Was it a nightmare having to write only 610 words on a regular basis for the news for The Independent?
I did lobby for 800 words, but they said, no, the space is 610.
Wow.
And it was actually, it really concentrates the mind, because you've got to go in, you're in and out very quickly. It's got to work. It's got to make sense. You've got to have a good idea, and you can, you know, you can write almost anything in 610 words. It's a very interesting and useful discipline to have to do that. I absolutely loved it. It was the most wonderful job I think I've ever had. And it only lasted 30 weeks, which I mourn to this day. It was about 5-6 years ago.
Right.
Wonderful job.
All right. What do you most like writing? You got a chance, I can tell from the books, that you got a chance to develop ideas and play with them and have fun with them. In articles that are 610 words, you don't, but you have to work hard at it. So what do you like to write? What's your favourite?
Well, at the moment, having written lots of books during lockdown, my favourite thing to write is nothing at all, because I'm absolutely exhausted. But I'll be starting another book in the autumn, I'm sure, when I've had an idea, which will probably require sitting in a coffee shop, staring at the waitress's firm buttocks, and thinking, I can't write an entire book about buttocks.
There's a little
just waiting for an idea to turn up. You just have to sort of, it'll be there sooner or later. I would say at the moment I don't want to write anything at all, but my favourite writing is definitely books. I mean, in terms of, because there isn't the one thing I've found as I've got older, I've become more and more averse to deadlines. I always fulfil them, but I don't like the stress of a deadline. I'm not very interested in stress at all, and books tend not to have deadlines, or if they are, they're so far away, it's not something you need to worry about. And I tend to deliver early anyway, because I'm quite quick. None of these books takes more than, I've never done a book that's taken more than a year. I think 10 months is my record. And they're not incredibly long. Most of them are about 65,000 words, which is about 210 pages. Something like that. They're not massive books by any means.
Going back to your activity in the coffee shop, there's a little note in front of me that says, this is not the opinion of TRE, and we wish to retract that remark and apologise for it. Right? for anyone that might be upset about that on a Monday morning. Anyway, listen, it's been really nice talking to you, and I can tell that even though you say you don't want to be writing anything at all, behind it all, you do actually enjoy it, and it's nice to have It's nice to know that you have found the thing in the world that you're good at. Do you agree?
Oh, completely. I mean, it is a pleasure. But just at the moment, I have to admit, my brain is not full of ideas, and I feel very, very weary. And I'm going to take the summer off, which is not something I would normally say, but
That's
I think, why not?
Indeed, if you are at that age, 60, 61, well, then you deserve and you've earned a rest, so enjoy it. How to Be a Writer is available in all good bookstores and online, but it's also available for our listeners at tre.radio if they'd like to get their hands on it. I'm certainly looking forward to having a look at it. Marcus Berkman is the author of How to Be a Writer, Baths, Biscuits and Endless Cups of Tea. I presume the baths is sitting there waiting for ideas, is it?
Baths are very useful for ideas. I find that I get in the bath and I'm thinking about so many different things that I wash all the various bits that I have in the same order that I always wash them. And then when I've done so, I think, and I get out of the bath, I think, did I wash anything? Did I just wash myself? And I've been thinking about other things.
Okay, there you go. All righty, Marcus Berkman, great talking to you. And thanks ever so much for talking to us on Talk Radio Europe today.
Thanks, my pleasure.
Thanks, thank you.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.